Hello, this is Richard Outram, and welcome to the Prepare for Growth podcast series, bite-sized wisdom for leadership and personal development. So thank you for taking time out to join me. I'm so grateful for this unique opportunity. Okay, and in this week's Prepared for Growth podcast session, I'm thrilled to introduce Willie Stewart, former director, principal drummer, and percussionist for internationally acclaimed reggae bands Inner Circle, and then supergroup Third World. For over 20 years, he played on the group's biggest hit songs, including Now That We Found Love, Always Around, and Try Jah Love. Willie co-produced 13 albums, five of which received Grammy nominations. He also received world acclaim as a recipient of the NAACP Image Awards, the Diamond Awards, and the United Nations Peace Medal. In 1980, he co-produced a 12-hour concert to honor Nelson Mandela during his post-release visit to Jamaica. Through similar performances for Amnesty International, live before 70,000 people, telecast to 30 million worldwide, and alongside Bob Marley at the legendary Smile Jamaica concert, Willie believes music provides food for the soul and is an unparalleled unifying force. He continues to build his musical legacy in ways that restore, preserve, and fortify the impact of music on the development of children and families, school culture, and communities. Willie is chairman and co-founder of Embrace Music Foundation, a nonprofit organization dedicated to teaching students the rudiments of music in South Florida schools. His signature Rhythms of Africa concerts play to a wide acclaim as he takes his message worldwide. In 2020, Willie received the prestigious Order of Distinction, Jamaica's sixth highest honor. And my wife and I, Nasima, have known Willie for over 10 years now. And I can tell you this, I am so thrilled, Willie, to be in this discussion and conversation with you. It's tremendous. And we've been to many of your events, and I can tell you, as a supporter and one of the audience members, it is electrifying. I have seen very few people, Willie, with your level of passion and, you know, support for a cause, for the audience and the community in general. And for that, Willie, I love you so much. I mean, it's just fantastic, Willie.
Thank you so much, Richard. Thank you for having me. And thank you for being my friend, you and Nasima, great friends for the last 10 years, and probably a little more too. Really appreciate it. It was great. And the whole just... You know, it's just good to have good friends.
Absolutely, no doubt about it. And so Willie's key wisdom bite for today is building unity through music.
Yes.
I'm going to talk about that theme now, okay, Willie? All right, so let's kick it off in our usual format. What have you learned? What would you change? What are you grateful for? And then a quick round, okay?
Okay.
All right, we're going to have some fun, Willie. I'm so thrilled to have you here. Okay, so Willie, what role did music play in your early years of your life?
Well, as you know, as an Englishman that you are, sir, born in England like myself.
Yes, yeah.
I was lucky to be exposed to a lot of rock.
Yes.
And my brother, Neville Lee, who started Sonic Sounds in Jamaica, that did a lot of, supported a lot of artists, brought all of them up in the 70s and 80s. He was a collector of music. He was a connoisseur of music. So we'd always play jazz and sing when I was a kid, like Smoke It In Your Eyes, South African songs. I remember the song, ba-da-ba-da-da, ba-da-da-da-da.
Wow, that
was,
yes.
All that. That was amazing. Kid that sticks in my head. And then my other brother, younger brother, was Gene. Gene played honky-tonk guitar. So he would play, and there was another guy called George Rudder, who was my godmother, who was Scottish.
Yes.
And he lived in, we had this big house in England, a 10-story house. And we lived at the bottom, and my father would rent out the different rooms. And my godmother was there, and her son was a drummer. So I would, one day he came and said, you know, I hear you playing, play this. And I played it right away. And he told my mother and my brother that I am definitely gifted. I'm a natural drummer from, you know. So I would always drum on pots and pans. And when I, as a little kid, to get a drum set was like, you're looking for to buy a Rolls Royce then. You know, it was, you never heard of it. So it was a seed. You know, in England, they had those pretty, the stores, the pop, mom and pop stores had the pretty lights. And you see, they light up the drums. And I would look at it for, I would long to look for hours, but my mother keep on pulling, come on now, come on now. I just keep on looking at it. I was amazed. And so every pot Chinese stick, I would always play. It was just born in me. And that is where I think that, I think God just gave me a gift to be able to play and play a different, play my own style. And I just give thanks.
Well, you know, Willie, you said that you began playing drums in your mother's womb. And yes. It sounds like that. It sounds you. And I tell you, Willie, for anyone who's seen you before, oh my God, you are a natural, man. You are a natural. I can't imagine anyone teaching you a trenia because that is just natural rhythm.
Well, the truth is, let me go a little forward here, that at one stage, when you knew all those songs that you love for Third World, I wasn't trained. That was just me playing naturally. I guess my God-given inspiration. But 1981, we was doing Try Your Love album. I still did it with my God-given inspiration. But I wanted to learn other things. And I went and studied with a gentleman called Billy Moore, who had taught like Earth, Wind & Fire drummer, all the top drummers. He taught me how to read, because he looked at me, his thing was, so Third World is happening now, everything is well, but tomorrow morning you break your hand, something happens, what do you do? To teach, you have to be able to read, you have to be able to understand music and all that, you have this. So when you listen to me, because I said I wanted to learn these things, so we were, Third World was playing at SIR, we were rehearsing in LA at SIR Studios, and he came and listened to me and said, you sound good, what do you want to learn? So he went on the drum set and played jazz and Latin and funk. And I went crazy. I said, that's what I want. I love that. He says, well, leave the ego at home. So while I was recording with Stevie Wonder in the studio, we would record most that night between hours of 10 o'clock to like probably the next day. And so what I would do is I'd go classes like 8 o'clock in the morning with him. And then I'd come back at 6 and then I'd get some rest and then go to studio. And that's how I did like 3-4 months, because he wanted to make me a good reader so I could do the correspondence course with him. So yeah. It took me about 4 years and I graduated in theater drama and things like that. So while we were all in Hawaii and everybody was partying, everything, I was in the books, sitting down and practicing and going through. And it helped today because I was able to, after leaving Third World, I'd be able to teach. And then I went, when I left Third World, I went and studied to be a music facilitator. And it was another thing. I studied in England to be a music facilitator, so you know.
So you went through a formal training, and so we're gonna come back to that. So there's maybe a little known fact that your oldest brother was Byron Lee.
Yes, same mother.
Now he's a celebrated, you know, reggae and calypso artist. How did he inspire you?
Well, first of all, being in England, my mother went to England, and he came to visit us in the early 70s. And that's the first time I'm seeing him, of course.
Yes.
And his other two brothers, he hugged them up and they had a little jam session and they were playing, him playing a little bass. And he told my mother that, well, it's his mother too, same mother, different father, that he wants her to come back to Jamaica. She should come back. And she came and we came. That's how we came over. And I came over at 11 as I came. And then his influence to me was when I came over and saw him perform. RJR is the radio station in Jamaica. So yes. He has like a 16-piece band, orchestra, the big orchestra, horns, everything. When I saw it, I freaked out. I said, Mom, that's what, when I look at the drum, I said, Mom, that's what I want to do. In my mind, I would clean the drummer's shoes if I could. If they give me a job to clean the drums, I'd do it every day. Just clean me and look at it. And my mother said, no, you're going to school. You ain't doing that. So my influence, watching them dance and everything, I said, that is what I want to do. And so his influence. And so what happened is that at the age of growing up, I had formed my own band in school called Visions and Dynamic Visions. And we played for parties. We played all over. And he used to hear me. And then when he played at like some beer club, we would open up for him. And so it was a great exercise for us to learn. And he would hear me playing. And then what happened, cut a long story short, when his drummer broke his foot, Esmond Jarrett, which is Carrot's brother in the world, he broke his foot. And he called my mother, and you know, if you know Baron Lee, he speaks very fast. Mama, what's it? I want Willie has to come right away and play with me. So I was in Inner Circle at that time, and I really didn't want to go, to be truthful, because I'm happy with the guys, Kat and Ibu and Roger and Ian Lewis, who have the biggest studio in our Circle House. And I said to Mr. Lewis, they didn't know though, could you hire me? Because I just finished my O-level screen test, if you know, in England, and you're supposed, yeah, not in Jamaica, and you're supposed to take your O-levels.
Yes.
And Mr. Lewis took up and said, if I took you, I'd be in trouble, because you have to do what your parents did. So I ended up in Baron Lee at the age of 16, in a 16-piece orchestra or more, touring the world, Iceland, Europe, the youngest member ever. And with great people like Ozzy Scott, Lester Sterling. Sterling played in Scatterlights, Ozzy Scott, all of them top players. So I had to play all over with them. So we went to Mexico, went all over Jamaica, played. So it taught me, being with Baron Lee taught me a lot. You know, I learned a lot from him, because right now, he's for dance music. He has an ear. He can play a crowd and swing them right through. I learned that leadership. His business brain is unbelievable. And his sing for hits, for understanding and playing back songs and doing that. Great. So I learned a lot from him.
All right. So we're going to talk now about, let's pull on that a little bit more now, Willie. So for Willie Stewart, how would you describe your music and your creative process?
My music, I think, first of all, you have musicians, I think, that are great musicians that can reproduce stuff. In other words, a musician can be a technical person, not wrong in that. He can hear something and immediately play it back. And then you have some musicians that are creators. I think those musicians are very special, because it's good to listen and you're playing things and you think, but you create your own style. And I think I tend to do that along with Third World. If you listen to Dreamland and look how long it was played, and if you listen to it, I wanted to create a kind of linear sound that it sounded like a dreamland, like a clock. Yes, and if you listen to the rhythm, it goes, I've never heard a rhythm like that before.
Yes.
Now that we found love, rhythms like that, Never Had No Tribal War, 96 Degrees. It is like, you don't, I sit down, I pray, and I just play what God give me. And I can't explain it. It's just that's something that comes. And so to me, in practicing and training, it's all to get your mind and your subconscious ready. But you don't say, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. If you do that, by the time you think you're out, you have to just be spontaneous. So what you learn is what you do. And what you have in you from God, that DNA. That's why when I teach students, I do it two ways. I say, okay, they have something that's unique to them. That's their signature sound to them. What you do is build on that. You never go interfere with their God-given energy and creativeness, but you try and add and give them tools to work with that they can develop and understand what they're doing and do other stuff.
Understood. Okay. All right. Okay. Now, I've been a recipient of your energy as an audience member. So my question is, so Willie, how do you do it? How do you energize the audience?
Well, but to be true for Richard, I think that I give God, the creator, that. I think that God, once you are sincere, you love what you do and you're passionate.
Yes.
Come for that. People react to that. Music, don't lie. If someone take up an instrument, you know whether they're playing because they need money or they're playing because they love it. Many people look at me and say, oh, he's in a different zone. And they might accompany that maybe to drugs and all that, but I don't take anything. I don't smoke, and people might laugh. I don't drink, I don't gamble. But my high is music. The moment I play, I sit down, I close my eyes. I mean, if you might see me in the audience, you're seeing me on stage. I am not there. I am playing, but I'm focused on what I'm doing. It's like I'm just in this zone that I can't explain. All I can do is give God thanks. And when we played as Third World, it's similar. All of us would play, and you just know that there was a telepathic link with all of us. That's why I said the original Third World, in the sense of I will talk about originality, because some members will say, oh, the original was a beginning of Third World. That is true as members, but the popularity of who knows who really made worldwide Third World, those six men is Bonnie Clark,
yes,
Richard Daley, Ibu Cooper, Cat Core, William Stewart, and Carrot Jarrett. That's the people that, those six men them, make it like Kentucky Chicken then. They are signature people that today, the Third World is riding on the energy and the work of those six people, even though those they have two. So to me, that the creative force of that is like a synergy together. It's a combination of people playing a sound. And I sit down and I listen over the years to Third World, and I can hear it as a person who was not in it. Sometimes it's very hard as a musician to divorce yourself from the real thing. You're hearing it and you're part of it. You hear mistakes, you hear this, you don't really. But I sat down and I can listen, hear it. I tell Richard, he can't believe it because he's still in it. Once you're involved in it, it's very hard to divorce yourself from it and listen. And when I listen, I said, boy, you can hear each member of that group brought their rhythm, their style to make it a whole. So Third World had a unique sound like nobody else. No other reggae act, no other funk act, no other Latin act, unique to its own self. And of course, Buddy with his voice and the harmonies. The keyboard playing of Ibu was phenomenal. How he played, it was a style. How Cat played, intertwined. It was a chemistry from heaven.
I agree and with
so
that.
That was a song. So you could, even if you did not understand or knew what a record was playing, from you hear it, you know it's Third World. If you had a rhythm, you knew it. And if you heard Bonnie's voice too, you knew it. So it was a signature sound. And it's very hard to repeat in this time because the elements, you need the elements to bring back that sound there. And God bless Sue Carrot and Bonnie, they're gone. So we have to give thanks for that sound.
Willie, I'll share a little story with you. So my boys and I, we did a little boys trip a couple of months ago to Asheville.
Yes.
All right. And we're chatting. We met some other guests there. And we're doing the hikes in the mountains. And one of the ladies, she was probably in her 60s or so. We were talking about the old days of music and the 70s and the 80s. And then we started to kind of, you know, just sing some little tunes amongst ourselves. And we're going back in time. And she was a disco girl and all that. And she goes, and she, I think, was from, I can't remember where she was from, originated from the US somewhere in one of the kind of smaller states. And she goes, you know what, Richard, here's a song for you. My favorite song of all time, Now That We Found Love. And I'm thinking to myself, wow. I mean, she was probably from the boondocks of the US. And she said she was in all the nightclubs, you know, when she was much younger, except she said that in the US, you know, was her favorite song of all time. And I couldn't believe that. And I said, you know, and then I mentioned that I knew you and everything else, but It was lovely. It was lovely to hear that there was that recognition, because I agree with you, Willie. The sound of Third World was just fantastic. And you know, it lit up the floors in the UK. You know that. And around the world, you know.
When now that we took off in Europe, we were in your place, in your country, Guyana. We were touring with Mr. Peters, touring the Mackenzie, touring the place of all the different areas. And to believe it was right then where Ghana was going through a very hard time.
Yes, that's
and believe me, we were there for at least 2 months.
Yes.
And a telegram came to us saying, listen, you guys are hitting the charts big. You have to come over. I'll never forget that. And we came and we toured. And now that we found love, even today, when you look on YouTube and the results and the response to it, is that people are saying, boy, they don't make songs like that anymore. Literally. Although, I must say that, Now That We Found Love is a Gamble and Have song. Because how it came along is that we went to Nassau. In fact, that Journey to Addis album, which is Third World's third album, my second album in the band, but Third World's third album, Journey to Addis, was, I think, one of the most spiritual albums, in that we went on a retreat prior to Portland in Jamaica for 2 weeks. And we trained by the water. We had special food cook. We discussed what we're doing. Ibu would have classes, music classes with us. I would do physical training with the band to get the man in fit. Everybody had it. Roddy Robs had something else that he did. Richard did. So everybody had a certain duty and we worked together. And I feel that was one of the closest we were ever. And when we went to Nassau, we would normally, to set up the studio, you needed to get a sound. The two hardest things to get the sound is the drums, the percussion, because everything else can plug in and you can play around with it, but you have to use mics. So then people get bored. We're going to sit down, you hear bam, bam, boom, boom, and you know, so Ibu would always come and Carrot would always, because he needed to do his stuff. So we would always jam. Three of us would always jam together. If we're on a bus, one plays something, the next person plays something. So we're in the studio, but Ibu knew that song. I didn't. And because it was a slow song on the Ship Ahoy album, the OJ's album.
Yes.
So Ibu started playing the cars. I said, that sound good. And I started jam. And Alex Sadkin, who was an incredible engineer, he's gone, God bless his soul now, but he had the tape running. And so during the course of recording it, there was a timbale there. And Cat came in, because they Cat, Richard and Bonnie came in about when we were jamming the song. And Cat went on the timbale and played that solo, if you hear that solo going on.
Yeah.
And so the rhythm section was us who created it there.
Interesting.
You know, that's a God creation. Unbelievable.
Awesome.
So that is how that came about. And when we heard the song, we'd listen back to it. And you hear, because in Nassau, you heard the radio. What's new on the radio? You could hear it. And when we would play it, you could know that, boy, it sounded unbelievable. It just sounded different, but yet, you know, and that's where we started. That really moved us worldwide.
A true work of art. Okay, so Willie, how do you get ready to perform?
Well, if you get ready to perform as a musician, first of all, you have to be prepared way before. Get ready to perform goes way back where you're going to know, all right, what am I doing?
Yeah.
What am I giving the audience? What am I playing? Are you playing combinations of different songs? Are you playing other people's songs? Are you playing originality? How popular is that originality? You know, where you're playing, what kind of audience? All this have to come in mind. Then you need to practice. So you practice your method, you know what you do, and then you go to try it. Not all the selections that you do work sometimes. Some fail, you learn from it. Some work out good. But you, after a while, you have key songs. You have a chemistry of key songs that always work. The problem in life is that the more you stay in the music business and the more you record, is the more songs you have and the less time to do it in. So then your albums that people know you for always want to have it. If you have 45 minutes, that's why you have to do and put things together and you work out a quick thing where you play touches and you go to the most hits that you have. You always still have to play those hits because the people know you for that. And if your records don't hit as you make 10, 13 albums, the biggest problem is this. Those records sometimes don't hit as the others. So you might play one and try it. It's new. People react different to it. They go, oh, yeah. But they want to hear. So you end up being, sometimes if you don't watch it, you can be nostalgic, playing the same thing over and over, and people still happy for it because they love it so much because it was a hit in their time and it's hit. So in the music business, you have to try and be as current as possible. You're as good as your last hit. That's the name of the business. If you don't hit, you have to play your old repertoire. So balancing with new creativity, new solos, new arrangements helps to enhance your playing. But your sincerity and the love for what you're doing will always project.
Absolutely. And that's how you stay relevant. And that's how you stay. So Willie, as part of your wisdom bite here, one of your taglines was rhythms in conversation.
Yes.
What do you mean by that?
All right. If you look at the sign behind me, you'll see different nations.
Yes.
Black, yellow, white, red.
Yes.
Mixture of everything. And about 5-6 years ago, I saw a divisiveness in the people, in all of us. There was a whole negativity.
Yeah.
That took everybody out. And it's like everybody was so into, and I said, as a musician, what can I do? And I came up with this rhythms in conversation as something to bring people together. because I said music does it, rhythm does it. I mean, people come, they listen to music, they don't business about that. They get music, transport them in a place where they all can be together. So if you look at the drum, you see that all of them, each note in their color, they're playing and playing their notes, and they're in the drum. The drum and the music unites them and the world that could be, and through music. Let us have time that we can be together and harmonize as individuals, as people, and be different. Let us see what we can do to be better people. And so through music, I've made this program called Rhythms in Conversation, where I do and I demonstrate it in different instruments. And then I have people dance, play along virtually, in the sense of, you know, interactively. And then it can go on to other things where I bring instruments and have them feel that music, and families, children. And when they play together, it brings the people together with that energy. And then after, I'm playing music and have them dance. So you start work. So I do for Corporate America. I do all the big companies where I do team building events with it. Stress reduction for people on the different things, hospitals and all these things. And in general for families. So when they see it, they see the different instruments. They learn something. So the brain, it's our hit brain. They know when you start playing instruments, they say, wow. And then when you give them that history, they're learning. And then when you play the high-end instruments, it moves the head. When you move the mid-range instruments, it moves that mid-range of the body. And when you hit the bass starts moving. So then you get them start interactive. Oh, I can't play. But you say, do you have a heartbeat? You say you can't play, but do you have a heartbeat? Are you living? So you have a rhythm. So then start getting to it. And then they start icebreakers, take them on. Before you know it, they're dancing. These people who they've never seen before start reacting. And that's how music is. It's like it does. It's a chemistry that moves in a whole different world. So Rhythms in Conversation is that, bringing people together, no matter where they are. For this moment, bringing everybody together under one umbrella to enjoy themselves, to feel a part of culture, to feel a part of themselves, to feel family, to feel unity, and get away from the stress of life for that moment. And sometimes people enjoy it for the week. They remember it, and it gives them that happiness within them, that fun, everything.
What a beautiful message, Billy. All right, absolutely beautiful message. So look, your passion to impart musical creativity in the younger generation is so inspiring. So, and you've started, obviously, and you co-founded the Embrace Musical Foundation. Should more emphasis on musical education be in the core curriculum for students?
I would say that younger children should start at an early age having music, from 5. Just listening skills, playing simple little percussive instruments. Music should be going from elementary, middle school, high, kindergarten, elementary, middle, high, university. It should never be something that stops. You don't have to be a prolific musician or thing, but it should be there. That is so, because the right and the left brain, the music connects both of them. So, and my argument is this, is that the word is that, oh, certain people and certain zip codes of kids can't learn. They don't remember this. They don't learn the academic way. But those students can remember 30 rap songs. If they can remember 30 rap songs, then they have that brain capacity to retain, to stay with attention, keep their attention span. The attention span is always a problem. How interested you are to, whatever you're interested in is what you stay with. So I came up with certain things when I teach teachers to how to do simple things. It's play percussive games, simple games, where they like. And it opens up the mind of that child who loves rap music or rhythm, because rap is rhythm in a sense, rhythm and rhyme. Play some rhythm and rhyme games. And it opens up that brain where they associate as being great, as what they like. By doing that, they say, I want to play it again. Can we play again? Yes, but learn the science. Do this, you'll be surprised, because by association, they're associated with mathematics, science, geography, English. And because of that, they're associated with it. They do it because it's in their zone of happiness where they want to learn and retain. So that's how you get into that. And also, music is very important in that our children, if they don't have any after-school programs, idle hands cause a lot of problems. So once they have it, and they will spend hours practicing the art and think if they had the vehicle and the instruments and tools to do so, and the teachers to help them along the way. So like any doctor or lawyer, music is just that as most important. Can you imagine a church without music?
Can't imagine that. Can't imagine that. Raise the roof. Okay. So Willie, you've also been active in social and human rights injustice causes. What do you believe in fighting for?
I believe in fighting for all human rights. I believe that there's a lot of disadvantages in the world, and it goes by class. Disadvantage goes by money, by who's rich and who's not rich. I believe that every human being should be looked at as a human being. Let's start with children, because children is what's very important, that every child, no matter what their zip code is, should be able to dream and have that and be able to reach that dream. They should not be locked in because they come from a certain neighborhood, and because the neighborhood might be, you know, maybe have criminal activity, that they should be judged for that. They should be able to live that dream. So our thing with Embrace Music Foundation is to fight for keeping music in the schools. That's why when we take kids, and most at-risk kids, well, they use that word, but we take at-risk kids and we work with them. I remember we did it with Big Brothers and Sisters. We took them in Miami, 60 of them, and there was like four schools in Miami. And we had to do it on a Sunday, train them on a Sunday at Special Park in Coconut Grove. And they would come and we would feed them and we start training them. And these, some of those kids were probably, God knows, a lot of things that was, they could be in trouble with.
Yes.
And those kids, because of little love and because of sharing, we had to perform at Adrian Arts Center, 1,600 people. When they were going to start to perform, or this concert was to begin, they were nervous. You see, when they got that clap, you could see the veil come off of them. These 60 kids were saying, I am worth somebody. I am somebody. That's what music does. And with the musicians that they play with, changes them. It's like they laugh with them and they feel, and when they see all of this light and all this come on them, they say, whoa, so this is what it's about. I can do this. And when you invite their children and parents and to come and see them, the younger brothers that could be influenced by other stuff or sisters, they look and say, I want to be just like my brother upstage. I can do it too. So by acknowledgement, it helps them. So you said my fight, let me run away from the. You said my whole thing is that every, no matter race or color, every human being should be equal. Because if anything happened to us, we all have the same blood. If anything happened to you, if someone comes to your house and something happens, we all have that same thing. You live on the road, if storm comes, it's going to hit everybody's house. There's a thing where humanity comes over, absolutely, where we have to be more. And I think of it in a sense that what I want for you, I want for everybody else. If I'm not going to, if I don't like it for myself, I shouldn't like it. So to me, just basic human, simple principles of goodness. Simple human principles of goodness, truth, and rights. That's it. No matter who you are, where you are, respect everybody. It don't matter where it's, whatever, if you believe in that, fine. But we must meet on common ground to be able to understand that there's a God and he made all of us. There's a reason why we're here. We don't have to fight. Even if we don't agree on everything, no problem. But let's have human decency. Let's have, you know, money. You can have it tomorrow morning. You can bury it. Where's it going to go? You take that money, is it going to go away with you? You're in a whole different atmosphere. We have something here. The keys in life to me is that each one of us have a mission here. And some of us knew what we felt. And you know it, because when you do it, it's like it's never work. The day something is work for you, is work. The day something is not, that's your God-given inspiration.
That's right.
Because you never go, if you ever say, well, I'm going to make money after work. And after a while, you hate it. But you make money. And then at the end of the day, when you reach older, you do what you want because you have the money to do it. But you don't have the energy. You don't have the energy. So you give the money to things that you believe in and you help. But you yourself could have been involved in it all the way and being a big thing through it. So this is what's so important. We have to learn to appreciate and be able to sympathize or empathize with people, saying that these are human beings. Let me help them. Let us see if we can talk. A good word of someone. You see someone in there. You see older people, the one across the road. Help them. If you see something, you pray about it and you help a youth. Talk. Sit down and talk as you talk to your own child. No matter what race or whether it is, because it could be your own child. These are things and principles that are basic things that I feel we have lost. And in this time here now, it is very important that we have to find back that, because what will be teaching the next generation of little 5 or 6 year olds, my grandchildren, what world will it be then? If we don't have basic respect for each other and don't have love, love is the most important thing that moves us around. It don't matter who have that and that. These are material things. What are we judged for? When you leave here, is what did you do to make a difference? Can we make a difference in life? And if people have money to invest, you don't do it, but can you give it to things that can invest and work and help people? There's no greater feeling than when you help somebody and see them helping and be able to go through. There's no greater feeling, because God rewards you with that feeling of satisfaction.
Well, you know, I tell you, Willie, your beautiful message about prioritizing and elevating humanity is a universal message. And our world would be a much better place if everyone was like that. And, you know, your point about being in the flow, I see how you bring the kids together and you're in the flow and they're in the flow. And I've met a few of the students. Even my boys have taken lessons with you, and you've brought out the spark in them, Willie. And you can just see how they've pivoted and changed. Even their self-esteem and their confidence has increased. It's just a beautiful thing. Just a beautiful thing. I know you take them for a period of time, for several weeks or so. And I've seen ones who have started with you and ones who have come out your training programs. And the spark you provided them in life is immeasurable, without a doubt.
Well, thank you so much for that. But as I said, Richard, let's put it this way. God is.
Yes.
And when that energy is gone, there's nothing. We are human beings, but as I said, people tend to, and I find singers sometimes do that because they sing it so close to them or instrument. They say it's them. God has given you that. God has given you that talent. He can take it away from you. And if we keep sincere and passionate about it, he will always refill you with that energy.
Yeah. Now, you've done some great events. One of them I've been to several times is called Rhythms of Africa, that event. And, you know, taking my entire family in a beautiful mix of reggae, jazz, Latino, R&B, and just a beautiful journey from Africa to the Caribbean and the various musical differences and tastes. How did you conceive that event?
And so in working with the ideas that I learned from England to be a music facilitator, I graduated, I put together that 4 different programs, History of Reggae Music, Journey of Drums, Rhythms of Africa. And so I started experimenting with my students. I was teaching here, right in the studio here. I would teach my students. And a thought came to me that the students that I'm teaching are very privileged, because their parents come and they have great parents. And sometimes those children take advantage of that. And I said, you know what? And I was playing in Caliph. I used to play a thing called summer morning programs with in at Caliph Auditorium every summer. And I said, let me take them down to see all the different children that be busting from Miami at Caliph Auditorium in Liberty City. It'd be an experience for them. Let them see that and let them be, instead of making my musicians playing the drums on the journey, let them take the journey. So I taught them here and then had them put on their black t-shirt. This was 2006. With the sign Rhythms of Africa, and let them play along. So they demonstrate the drums while the musicians play the music part. And the children loved it. And I said, I have to develop this. That was about 2006. And then now 2011, 2010, I did my first one at Miramar Cultural Center.
I remember that.
And then people lined up around, they couldn't get in. I mean, it was 3 times line. There was 1,000 people.
Yes, I remember that.
It was free. But believe me, it was something else. So that is the start. And then that's where I met my friend Steve, who became my CEO. And he and me and him formed Embrace Music Foundation. And so Rhythms of Africa started, the program started there.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
What it was, and the program developed through Embrace Music Foundation, which is our nonprofit that we formed. We moved on from there. We got, after that show, Steve looked at me and he was working. He got that grant for me, a broad grant. And He says, did you ever do the Knight Foundation? You know, Knight Foundation.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
They're the biggest. And he says, like playing the lottery. You know, let's try. We tried and we got through. I think I was the first Jamaican to get that $25,000 grant from them. And it's like when they endorse you, other people endorse you, because that's the creme de la creme,
of course,
in a sense. And after that, me and him became very, very good friends. I worked with Dennis Scholes, and it was really, really good. And I ended up getting, I was like, at one stage, I was a reader for them. Yeah. And also where I would look at the grants and everything. And also they helped me on other projects, and I was very grateful for that, you know. So that, and we moved on from there. We did eight Rhythms of Africa show. And Rhythms of Africa is where we take children, kids, mostly high school. We did middle school already too. But high school children, they don't have to have no diploma in music or even know about music. In fact, that's the requirement. You don't have to know anything. And then we have a way of method of training them, 30 hours of training, and they play on this big show. As you know, we did Pembroke Pines.
Yes, before, which is a great show.
Lockdown in 2020, February. And 2 weeks after that, everything locked down. 3,000 people was turned back. 3,000 people came, 600 people was turned back from the show. And that is the type of thing. It brought people together. We used musicians and showed the journey, like I said, from Africa, northeast, southwest, into Brazil, Puerto Rico, then into Haiti, then Jamaica, Trinidad, New Orleans, and then right there in Florida.
Yeah?
And Trinidad trip was great, you know. So to me, we have developed it's an entity of its own.
Really. It has. And we have got people, because of the lockdown, we have got family members. We had a number of them. I think it was about 20 family members who attended. They can't wait, Willie, for the next one. We missed it last year. I know it's pre-COVID, the last one. And you brought all the great reggae stars from Jamaica and from the islands. And people can't wait for it to come back. So hurry up, Willie.
Well, we're looking at February, but as you know, with the Delta, that is why I'm doing Rhythms of Conversation right now. I'm doing a 9-city tour. We've done 6 and we're finishing 4 this in August here. But we're doing most of them outside, and it's been successful in that. Even if I have the mask up, we do it and the people respond. They go and in the fresh air have their thing and they dance. It's just something, because with COVID, we have a lot of sad people right now.
Right, exactly.
Because there's children that has lost both father and mother. The people that has died, I mean, it's unbelievable. So my thoughts is that in this time, quiet time, God is saying, okay, you've had this time. If I give you a chance to move on, what are you going to do? Are you going to do the same thing for the world? Are you going to help? What are you going to do to help the youth? What are you going to change what you did yesterday and make something different? What are you going to do for humanity? And I think this is a time where, for reflection, it's made me say that, okay, you can't take anything for granted. Get your music. There's music I've done in the past. There's music I think about. Rhythms in Conversation. Get it out there. You know, get it to people. Start getting them so they can have a little time to take a breath of fresh air, to feel something different, to be transported somewhere where they can feel hope. Musicians out there who write should be writing now poetry and music, so that so much people are hurting, so they can feel hope now. Now is a time where music has to come to kind of counteract the negativity that we're
facing. The despair. No, you're right. Despair and doubt.
Because
no.
Music that can give us that. That is what music can do. Spiritually put us somewhere else to empower us. This is what has to happen now.
That's absolutely right. So Willie, you worked alongside some musical legends. You mentioned a couple of them. Of course, in addition to yourself, Stevie Wonder, Eddie Grant, Bob Marley, Carlos Santana, Quincy Jones, U2, and The Police. Which genius left a life-changing impression on you and why?
Boy, that's a very hard question. That's an unfair question, because everybody has their own thing and reacts to it in a different way. Everybody has a different thing that you relate to in a different way. My good friend, Eddie Grant.
Yes.
Give my hat to Eddie. Eddie has taught me a lot, I would say, in the sense of everything. Brother, friends, his business approach, his music. I learned so much from it. It's phenomenal. The man, when it comes to knowing the music business and the sincerity of his heart, boy, believe me, a lot of people don't understand him, but he's a very powerful person inside and deep.
You know, Willie, when it was a couple of years ago when you came to our house for dinner, and I tell you one thing, Nassim and I still say, with you, and with Eddie and your wife. And it was just one of the most tremendous nights, which just flowed. And when he started to give his history from Guyana to England and how he changed the world and pioneers, it left you dumbfounded. I mean, it was just such a fantastic story.
There's very few. You don't need a TV to switch on. Just listen to the man. If you're going to listen to him, you have to go put on your thing, because get to water, go to the bathroom, because you don't want to leave. You sit down and
don't want to leave.
So interested. Stevie Wonder now was another very, very great thing in that when Stevie came to Jamaica, I went to Ocho-Rios and met him there. He came to my house, and him and Ibu and myself took him out to Sheridan, to the hotel, and we talked, and he came back to us, listened to the music, and then we ended up coming together and doing that jam. That was phenomenal. Santana, I love how Santana plays. He's been influenced all of my life. I love the group Earth, Wind and Fire.
Of course. Quincy
Jones, I think, is an incredible
producer. My favorite.
The brain of him is the music is unbelievable. Well, Bob Marley is in a whole category of his own, because with Bob, I happen to have, as a kid, I had backed up Bob. I backed up Bob at school, St. Andrew's High School, girls' school. And I was in a circle at that time and State Theater. And I can't forget that. You know, when you hear the song, No Woman No Cry?
Of course.
Alive. In that show, Third World opened that show. Third World opened four shows on that tour for when Bob was touring England.
Interesting.
So, I mean, Bob, as a songwriter and everything, unbelievable, I would say. So these are some, and believe me, the Jamaican artists over the past, just playing with association, a lot of them. And I have favorites of my own musicians that I just love, you know. To me, all musicians are very special people. You can't have favorites. You can't have, we like, but each one of them who come, you know them. The creators, I call them. They are the creators. It's different from those who are technical playing and all. It's great. But you have the creators that is a signature to them when they play. You know it. They bring something to the table that is different. And I just give thanks. Because to me, they're like preachers in their own way. They give this gift and they get this gift, even though it's given to them by the Most High. But at the same time, you see where it's coming from. It's like they are the messengers then.
Messengers.
But the product belongs to that higher force.
That's a great way to say it. Okay. You know, Willie, you and I were saying we've got 4 hours of conversation here at least. So we'll get to, you know, the next part down, and we'll move fairly quickly through the quick round. But so Willie, what would you change in life, not just business? What would you change?
In life, I don't know if I would change. I would probably live my life the same way. I would be looking more wiser. I would pay more attention to humanity. I would marry my same wife.
Oh.
I would in life, I think I would be a little bit more far-reaching thinking. In other words, little things you take for granted when you're younger, I wouldn't have done that now. I'd have probably invested more materially in sense of houses and construction. Okay, there's things where you don't understand, you don't see, and you would understand. Being older now, the wisdom that you get,
of course,
you'd have been a little bit less frivolous in your life in sense of spending and things like that. But at the end of the day, I think that I wouldn't want to be born again at this time, because in my time of seeing the musicians and the love coming out of Jamaica and going around the world and playing with some of the great and how they are, that I don't see that here now anymore. That's not there. The digital has taken a whole different world. That's where you can, and when you left and played as a musician and hearing, and the elder musicians talk to you, it's life, it's a memory for life. That school there, I couldn't repeat. So I give thanks for where I am, for what God has given me, and the time that I've spent through
that's
that. So
awesome. Awesome answer. That's an awesome answer, Willie. What are you grateful for?
I'm grateful that God has blessed me to have friends, to have people that care, to meet people. God's blessed me to know nature. God has blessed me to have a great family, wife, friends. I mean, what could I ask for more? I've never starved one day. I mean, and he has made me also to be humble, to understand that there's greater things in life. And I'm a learning student. I'm still learning. So I'm grateful that I can still be, and I'm more grateful that I'm still sitting here at this minute, at this moment, at this second, I must give thanks for that. I must be grateful, especially now, because to me, COVID-19 has put death on steroids.
That's right. That's right.
So if you never was serious about life before, you're better because you've seen it. You've seen friends calling you. They're gone. One has to wonder if people see, get a glimpse of heaven, and they say milk and honey, and they say, watch here, I can't take the woes of life, let me go over. But I mean, in respect, a lot of families are sad. A lot of people sad. And to me, I would say that to them, that listen, God is, don't give up. It's going to be, because one thing is for sure, if you're born, you're going to leave. Because if we lived immortally forever, would we like that?
Right.
You'd be, so if we believe that is our belief and faith is what going to carry us to the other side. Never give up hope. Never. Whatever it is, know that if you leave and you're going to go to a better place. And let us live that life here so we can acknowledge to go through that door. Because our whole existence here is to learn, is to be together, have family, and also do certain things that we show that we appreciate. And can we pass the test of time without losing our soul? That's what's more, to keep our soul in contact as we were as a child, innocent, and be able to move and say, yes, God, I passed my test here.
Live your unique purpose, as you're saying, Willie. Live your higher purpose.
Yes.
And live in gratitude and contentment.
That's the key. And if once you find that, you won't be bored. No one should be bored because there's so much things in life to learn and to do.
Yeah. If you could change one thing in the music industry, what would it be?
Some of the business side of it.
Okay, go further.
Well, business can be very rough.
Yes.
Very rough.
Yes.
And the musicians has never, they created the music. Let's face it. Look at the music now. The musicians are getting nothing back who record the music, who own the music. They created, this is, you think we can go to someone's house and go take a key and say, we're taking it. You're locked up or get shot. Police taking you out. But you're taking music now and actually give it away and as if it has no value. It can't be so. This is intellectual property, just like anybody else. They create, it's like their babies. When somebody is spiritually connected to music, that's their babies, that's their life, that's their sweat, you know? And it's not respected. It's not respected. Musicians are not respected most of the time. People love them and respect them, but the business don't respect it. And that is what have to start changing. And how you change that is that the countries that have it, Jamaica and all the countries, has to have a different attitude towards musicians and the business. Instead of formulate schools, start teaching the children to learn music, set the platform and the tools for them to learn, but set the platform to be great lawyers, great managers with sincerity. Sincerity and honesty and integrity. And say, all right, I can get to this. I'm going to do this. Everybody get a piece of the action. This is how it is.
There's no doubt.
This is what we need to be, just like the music, come and help people. The business has to change to also be honest to the musician, that everybody. And it goes also to the musician, where the musician shares with his other musician friends. You try and share the pie that everybody can eat. Reasonable.
Absolutely. You know, There's always a lot of talk and from the industry that artists are treated as commodities. And
That's a fact. You're as good as your last hit record. Yeah. You're put on a shelf. If you don't sell a record, you're put on a shelf. Oh, we'll put it there. Your tax write-off. No one after that. You don't take a rocket scientist, know that. The Beatles manager, Epstein or whatever his name was. The man went out and bought 500,000 records to put the Beatles up. He went and so that's his belief. You have things, look at the story with Celine Dion.
Yes, yeah.
He went and sold his house and to do the pusher. You have certain managers that have done extraordinary stuff because they believe in the artist to move them up there.
Right.
You need more managers who believe to move the artist there and people with that initiative to do so.
Okay. Your favorite song of all time?
That's a very hard thing. That's a very hard question because I have so many of them. I can't. It's very hard. I've been thinking about that question you asked me. But you asked me some of my favorite album on Third World. If you ask me my favorite album, two albums, is Journey to Addis.
Oh, wow, beautiful.
Third World and 96 Degrees. To me, they're two different albums and two incredible albums with creativity. I love so much songs. General songs out there, there's so much songs that appeal to me that I can't pick a favorite. There's too much of them. I will go back from Sam Cooke, it's just too much, you know. Just the Two of Us, I love that song. If you put it on, you know, it rings a bell, you know. It's too hard to pick because I love so much.
That's all right.
I love all the great songs.
What process of formal music training would you recommend to someone who has a desire to pursue the path?
First of all, if you have a desire, I would say, look at the different musicians or the instrument that they're playing and hear their style. Listen to the record. No problem is copying and learning. You're learning, you're getting somewhere. Eventually, decide if you want to do it. Then find a good teacher. But some of the gospel drummers, they never took a lesson. And they're playing things that not even Berklee students can play. They're playing linear beats and amazing. So if God has given that gift, you know. But stay humble and learn. You don't know it all. And you can learn from older musicians because they've been there. So if you want to be cocky and, I am this and that and show off, then that's one thing. The great poet said that, you know, they'll be always better and lesser than yourself.
Yeah.
So you just have to know. To me, I tell my students, if you're on the drum set, unless someone physically take you off, that is your moment. No one can do, anybody can say anything, that's your moment to shine or to depart what you're going to give. As a musician, as a singer, what is it that you want to give the audience? What is it? Do you want to be a star? And what is it will you do to make it? Would you go half naked out there? Does it bother you? Or would you have a concept where you're going to have a certain level that you're staying on, you're not going below, but you want to go higher? So all of these things, are you a musician because you want to enjoy it and you don't care what you do? All of these things you have to think about in your career. In the first part, it's fun. You're learning and you're making mistakes. Don't worry. You're making a thing, you're practicing, it grow. I always tell people, when they practice, they want to learn this. You're not going to learn everything overnight. But just like you see a weed in your garden, and then all of a sudden the weed grows this high, you don't see it. It happens. Music is like that. While you're learning and you play, bam. Then all of a sudden it's like, you don't know where the time go, boom. So practice, practice makes perfect. Practice, think about your ideas. Learn, watch, learn, use a visual, use everything. And then if you have a good teacher, it's good because they can help you through whatever. And talk to your own peers, play along with other musicians is the greatest thing. Play along with people in general. I mean, I have played with professional musicians in my life over the last 19 years. I play with more unmusicians than anything else. But what? I have fun. I'm having fun. They're playing a beat, and I'm surprised sometimes when I play with certain companies, say, I have no rhythm. And when I play with them, some of them surprise me. They keep the rhythm. I say, wow! Because as a music, the difference between a music facilitator and an instrument, a person who is an artist or established, people come to hear them, so they get aware about them. When you're a music facilitator, you have to do things that bring out the best of the people that you're bringing in. You're bringing something that they never expected. You're bringing it out of them. You're facilitated something that it could never happened and they didn't know even about themselves. And when you're done a workshop and see the people's face, wow, I didn't know this. It's amazing. So, you know, so to me, I would say to students, don't give up. There's going to be good days and there's going to be bad days. But take it as a learning experience because nothing is made overnight. But after, with strict discipline and your love, your survival, and keep practicing, the sky is the limit.
Great advice, Willie. Great. And would that advice, because we talk music in general, would that advice change in any way in the question of what is the secret to becoming a great drummer and percussionist? Is it exactly the same advice, or would you say something?
Would be same advice. With a great drummer, because you have to, yes. All musicians are the same basic thing, but with a great drummer, you have to have an open mind. you have to open up mind, because in the world, drums is one of the first instruments. Voice first, sound.
Yes.
And drums. In Africa, to be a master drummer in Africa is like the mayor of a city in New York or governor. It is revered for you to hit that drum, because everything spiritual comes from it. So when they beat the drums for a ceremonial occasion, it's for healing, various things. So that was important. So having the drum, first of all, you have to respect the drum. You have to respect what it's for. And then you, in playing the percussions, each drum that you see have a different technique. Let's take the tabla from India. Tabla from India, 7 years for you to get to understand it.
Yes.
7 years of study and mastery is another 7 years. 21 years to master to that tabla. Imagine, you have to speak it. It takes about 7 years just to learn the land and understand. Then you go through. Listen, each instrument has its own amount of years to learn. I would teach and I say, okay, I facilitate playing all of them. I don't play the tabla though. I mean, but facilitate. I'm not a master of them. That's not my thing. I think that, and I'm not going to say I'm master of drum set, but drum set is the thing that I play. So the drum set is what I teach. I'm going to say, well, that and that. If people want to learn the congas that I'm showing it. I have my friend who do that. They want to learn the djembe drum, I have another master teacher that. They want to learn the bongas, I have another teacher that teach that. They want to learn the djembe, that's another master, you know, and percussions in general. It's a whole different thing. So each instrument is like babies, very special. So with rhythm, one has to learn. It's good to play fancy stuff and play that. But the drummer's important. If you're playing drum set, your job is to motivate the man and the people. So when you play, you hold them together. You must always know where one is. Because if the drummer lose the one, no matter how good the voice is or anything, everybody's going off ship. The ship is sinking. The drummer is what keep everybody together. There's a lot of joke about drummers. But he's the man that really conducts and directs. Because if he rolls, is a clue for something. If he's doing this, the changes. He's keeping that time. And his time makes people dance. He's the heartbeat of everything. So you have to be able to sit down and be able to have that and be able to inspire, to be able to energize your band, to be able to energize the people. And by that, you respond, the band responds, and the people go crazy. It's a science of its own.
It's a beautiful thing. You're the glue.
You have to be the glue. You have to be there. You have to be there like the traffic conductor. You're playing a part. You know everybody's parts in your head. And you know what's coming next. Because when you do something, it's cueing this, that. You just don't roll out. It's like, bam, ba-da-dam, we're starting. Bam, the team. If someone's keeping it slow, you have to keep them on time. Right there.
Right.
All that. You're there. You're the heartbeat. You put in it. And you make them come up and down. I remember when I was a kid and I went to Caribbean Theater to see Jackson, Chuck Jackson, play. And the first time I ever heard, I'm watching, and it goes, bam, on the drums. And when he did that on drums, the light come down. I felt I was falling down an elevator. My heart. And I said, whoa. That's what we call simple thing. Dynamics. Slow. Fast. Boom. Soft. It is where you build. It's how you build and shape. Tapestry. Music is a whole shaping.
Wow.
It's how you play it. The accents. All of this is like cooking. It's ingredients that makes the pot nice.
This is so beautiful, Willie, for the listening audience. Your smile is as wide as a screen. Your hands are moving all over the place like as though you're playing
man,
the drum.
It
is beautiful.
Man.
I love it.
I'm a madman. Listen.
The animation.
Listen, everybody has a heartbeat. You don't have to be a great musician. You don't have to, but everybody can participate in rhythm. Everybody can clap their foot. Everybody can dance. So you can be your own musician. I'm telling you, if you ever start playing and you can hold a beat, the key is trying to hold it and you hold it. It starts sweet you. Then everybody join in. And there's nothing greater than when everybody's playing in unity together or even playing independently, but together. Unbelievable. Something happens where the world changes.
Magic.
And a magic happens that one can't explain. People start bust out dance. People start shout. Music create. They lose themselves in it. They get wild and think. It transports them to a place without moving from their seats. They're gone. They become part of the culture. Then start some dancing that they didn't even aware of.
converges to their body. I love it. Right.
They have a good time. What people go to a goal is to escape. Escape the woes of life every day, hardships every day, especially now, the amount of pressure. People are going, especially with COVID and the thing what's happening in the world, people are depressed. People are under serious tension.
That's right.
And music is that release for them.
And you've come back to that theme and your wisdom by number of times in this conversation. Willie, I love it. Two more questions. What is your greatest memory as you toured the world playing music?
Well, I thought about that too. My thing are the greatest. I think one was when Stevie Wonder played with us on Sunsplash. Bob Marley died 1981. I won't say yes. And we had the concert at it's Sabina Park. Is it? Well, it's a park in Montego Bay. I think it's Sabina Park. Well,
that's a cricket ground. That's the cricket ground.
Sabina. No, it was a. Well, it's a big in Montego Bay. We were playing the concert there, and it was fantastic. Stevie came on stage. Nobody knew he was coming. It was rumored. And when he came on stage, it tore the place down and we jumped. In fact, you can hear it. It's on YouTube. The sound, they told everybody to move the camera. Someone should have kept that camera. It was unbelievable. He's played Now That We Found Love with us. He jammed on Master Blaster.
Oh, yes.
And Rita Marley came on. He did Redemption Song.
Yes.
And another song too. And boy, believe me, it was something else. That was something to remember. I would say when we played Giant Stadium, Third World played for Giant Stadium, along with Santana, Brian Adams,
yes.
Miles Davis.
Oh, wow.
You name it. All of them was on the show. We opened it. And we were on MTV. MTV was out about a year. Started just a year. And when we came on MTV, about 21 million people was looking at us. And we opened it. And I think if you look at my video, see it. And people could believe it. I think the guy was Eric Cool or Eric Gould, they called him. He was announcer. And he says, I don't know this group. But boy, they tore it up. 80,000 people in Giant Stadium, New Jersey. And they were all rocking. I have the proof of it, the video. The whole place. Because Amnesty is about, as you know, human rights. And Third World songs. You know, some bands would have to go and find in their repertoire a one or two songs. We had every song for it.
That's right.
Every
that's
song.
Right. That's right. Oh, that's beautiful, Willie. That's beautiful.
And so that was another one. And when we went to Nigeria in 1977, Festac, we went to play in Nigeria and we stayed about 2 months there. That when we opened the show, and we're not opening the show, when we brought in equipment from England, Britannia Row, PA system, people start to clap when they see the lights going up like that. And when we play the show for the people, they couldn't believe it. And even the last show I did before I left Third World in Uganda was a fantastic show too. So I would say that. Another one would have been when I played with, when Third World played at Radio City with Dennis Brown.
Dennis Brown
opened. We did a whole Sunsplash show with Dennis Brown and Gregory Isaacs. And Radio City, we had our record moving. I think it was Sense of Purpose at that time. 6,000 people, two shows set up. Played out. That was fantastic too. And there's a lot of things so I think most of it was with Third World, playing with Third World and other things that came in with that, you know?
That is beautiful, Willie. All right, last question. What is your one piece of parting advice for any aspiring musician?
Music is important. Do not take music, one, for granted. If you're going into music, say you want to do stardom, stars burn up. If you want to be a star, you'll always be hunting that next star. But if you go in with a sincere heart, but love what you do, learn it well and play from your heart. If you love what you do and play from your heart, then you will always have a part of music because music will reward you. Because by being humble in it and not showing off gives you longevity in the business. Also, you keep on your ears to learn. You're never too old to learn. If you see another musician that's great, give him props. Don't beat on musicians. Learn from them. Learn from the good and the bad, because all of us, all of us balance each other. So to me, enjoy every moment, practice hard, but believe me, when you go into it, go in sincerity. No, if you're a songwriter, go in it, what am I? Am I going to write, what am I writing all these lyrics for? Am I writing to get money? Nothing wrong in that. But isn't it be good if you could also write positive things? Try and write positive things that in the next 20, 30 years, people can still play that music. To me, the creators of music, you still hear the music of Bob. Look at, you know, it still plays on as modern songs. No matter what, when they're gone, it lasts life and life. That's what I say. The legacy lives on. That's why they call the musicians legends, because no matter what, they can see the videos of them and say, wow, that's how they looked. The music lives on past the life of the musician. Today, you have disposable music that you hear it and it's gone. It's like it's disposable. You don't remember it again.
Yep.
But then everybody's still taking the music of the old music and putting on new things on top of it, which has been a hit already.
That's right.
So to me, the creative process, trying to be creative, try and come into a creative space and find something different. What younger musicians is following one? They hear something and they follow it, and then everybody does the same thing. Don't be afraid to be different, because the difference is what's going to lead tomorrow.
That's right. That's
if
right.
You copy something that is there now, by the time you put it out, it's gone, it's stale. You might get something that I don't know, but it's you. And you don't know. The people love it. You become the trendsetter of tomorrow.
That's right.
And if we're doing lyrics, I said, do things that you're young now, if you're in a business or a young person. But think of if you get older. Are you doing things that you're going to be ashamed of? Or if you have children or whatever. No, we don't think at young, you don't think of that. But you should think of it. Let me do something to make my parents proud and my family. That is, when I do something, it inspires people. It motivates people to do the right thing. It makes them want to feel them, or it brings emotion to them if you want them to cry because of something that happened. You can write the emotion. You want an emotion. How do you want? What you want the people to look at you at a distance as? And from you have this in your head and you go through, then people will now feel the magic. People will start telling you what you have and what is it to them. It's like medicine. You're like a doctor. What are you giving the people to change? What are you going to help them to transport them somewhere else? That's what's important.
Beautiful. Willie, I can't thank you enough. These are just such tremendous wisdom bites. Not only are you a legendary drummer and percussionist and musical producer, above all, at least from my conversation now, and I've known you for over 10 years, you're a tremendous humanitarian. You inspire people. You inspire, you bring
out. You too, Richard. You too. Your work that you're doing is important within all of that to get people to understand. Thank you for the work you are doing, sir. You and your wife, you're doing from incredible humanitarian work and community work. I know you love it. And the sky's the limit for you, Richard. Thank you so much.
You too as well. God bless you, Willie. Love you very much, you and your family. Thank you, Willie. All the best. Bye-bye. I hope that you found today's session valuable. If so, please follow me on Instagram @outram.richard and post your comments. Thank you again. Until the next podcast.